Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So, Milan Lucic, who we've talked about almost every podcast.
Yeah.
Because his name's been involved in trade rumors ever since he went on Vancouver radio and mused about playing for the Vancouver Canucks.
Even before, but especially after that.
Started to get people's hopes up, including me. Although there's a large contingent of Oilers fans who really like this player.
I listened to Bob Stauffer's Oilers Now show yesterday, and Bob put up a spirited defense of what Lucic means in terms of toughness, and then about eight callers in a row, it seemed like, phoned in and said, can you imagine him on Calgary? That would be just the absolute worst. Him protecting that Tkachuk, and we'd have to deal with that guy, and
Bruce, he's not the only reason the Oilers have been a losing team and a really bad team the last 2 years. Milan Lucic is not the only reason.
Mm-hmm.
He's a major reason. And anyone who doesn't see that, like, do I care if he goes to Calgary? Well, yeah. Do I think he's going to help them win? No, I don't know. Like, yeah. If you lack toughness, and again, we're just going to cut to the chase on Lucic. This is our keep, hold, or fold series. So what would you do with Milan Lucic? Keep, hold, or fold?
Yeah.
And fold's a buyout, I guess.
Yeah, you can't buy him out. That's the thing. The contract is basically buyout proof. Although, you know what? I did just look it up. And if they were to buy him out now, they would actually save against the cap almost $2.4 million next year. So that would allow them to buy, a decent.
But that's just the one year, Bruce.
But that's just the 1 year. And then the next year it drops to $375,000, which is less than the minimum contract, meaning that you can bring in a $700,000 player to replace him and you're actually still losing on the exchange. So to me,
and going forward, that's the case.
The buyout's close to a non-starter. If Holland does that, it's because there's just nothing out there and he just decides that he's got to move on no matter what. But I guess that puts me in the hold camp. You hold and you try and see what you can do and move him. And I guess, I don't know, in a worst-case scenario, he just stays on your team. I mean, that's the trouble with these contracts, right? You can't even send him down.
Yeah. The one thing I liked about what Stauffer said is apparently his teammates really like him. Mm-hmm. He's liked in the dressing room. So he's not like a player who's causing trouble in any way. He's just, he stands up for them. He likes them. And, I think if Milan Lucic, let's say Milan Lucic were earning $2 million a year.
Oh, no problem.
So I think most other fans would think, hey, we got this guy on our fourth line. He's earning $2 million a year. There'd be some debate. Like the pure skill people would still not like him, and the Truculence Incorporated would really like him. But it would be, I think, more of an even split and probably leaning towards like, yeah, he's okay. Like he doesn't really hurt us. He doesn't help us. And he does protect McDavid, and that's a big thing. So,
Should never have cut out that last game in Calgary, eh?
Yeah, exactly. David wouldn't be rehabbing this summer. There's something to it. It's not nonsense. Hockey is a tough game, and having big, tough, scary players on your team does make a difference to your team. It's really helpful to your team, especially if they can play a bit.
Yeah.
If they can play a bit, man, you're just laughing. Like, you're in luck. Now, Lucic is he's a fourth-line player right now. I peg his value, and we've been over this. I peg his value at about somewhere between, depending on the term. But if you just sign him on a 1 year deal, if he got $2.5 million, I think he would get between $2.5 million and $3 million a year if a team was to sign him for 1 year on the open market next year. I think that's what Ryan Reeves got in Las Vegas. I think they're very comparable players at this point in their careers. With Lucic having a bit of a glow, because you might hope he can do a bit more than that. You're never going to hope that about Ryan Reeves. I don't think Lucic will ever do that. The reason, Bruce, I want to see him traded is he has sunk the Oilers because of usage. Coaches have played him way too much. He's gotten way too many minutes, way too many choice minutes. 3 years, at least 2 years in a row, maybe even arguably in his first year. They keep putting him on with McDavid and Draisaitl. And the other week on Stauffer, I heard Bob musing again about Lucic playing with Nugent Hopkins or Draisaitl. I just thought Nugent Hopkins and Lucic are terrible together. Like, they're just terrible. It doesn't work at all. Draisaitl and Lucic, I had hopes that would work as late as the start of last season. I was thinking, like, Draisaitl is your Esposito in the slot, and Lucic is your Cashman in the corner. But it just, he just can't win enough pucks and make enough plays with the puck for that ever to happen. And I don't want him, because I just worry that the next coach is going to do this. We're going to go through the same bloody scenario one more time, where we see Milan Lucic on the first or second line for 20, 30 games. Games you never get those games back. You never get those minutes back where you're wasting it on him. And sorry, that's what you're doing at this point. So I really, if I was assured that he would just be a fourth line player, I'd be more sanguine about him being on the Oilers, even at $6 million per year.
Better as a $6 million fourth liner than as a $6 million second liner, eh, David?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's an interesting case, but I hear what you're saying.
Because that's how you win. Like, I don't care about anything about winning. And the Oilers can find a way, I think, to win with him on your team as a fourth line guy. They can't find a way to win with him as your second line guy earning that amount of money, because he just brings down other players. He's not good enough. So
yeah, on a skill line, I tend to agree. And on a grind line,
the identity line,
he's the flat line, I call him. He does grind, and I give the player credit, you know, for, it's not like he's coasting to me. It's not like he doesn't care. It's not like he's, well, I got my paycheck and I can take the rest of my career off. That's not the sense I get from watching him play. A lot of the sense I get from watching him play is frustration that he just can't get it done. And his hands are what deserted him first. I mean, people talk about him being slow of foot. Well, a bigger problem is with his hands and bobbling the puck or turning it over just inside his own blue line. You know, that play where you pass it around to the winger. The one thing you expect out of a veteran winger is that puck's got to go out of the zone. And he commits egregious turnovers just inside his own blue line far too frequently for my liking. He's got, if you look at it on the surface, his possession numbers that I know everyone loves, they look good. But for example, our good friends at puckiq.com, they cut to the chase, and his relative numbers, which is how he does relative to teammates, look real good when you look at Corsi, +3.5% compared to average Oiler. But when they look at dangerous Fenwick, which is actually quality of shot blended in, he's actually a -1.7. That's a huge disparity between just general shot generation and actual dangerous shot generation shows up on his record. And that's at both ends of the ice, not generating dangerous offensive chances and bleeding a little bit too much on the defensive side of the puck.
Yeah. Well, whatever is Corsi, I think there's a lot of randomness, even in relative Corsi. There's a certain, and I just think, anyway, our scoring
chance. Corsi has been good his whole career. I mean, he is a good possession player.
Mm-hmm. Our scoring chance numbers show him as one of the weak, is as the weakest Oilers winger last year, other than Drake Caggiula, who was a mess on defense. Drake Caggiula was just leaked chances like crazy, couldn't cover anyone in his own zone. Lucic was the worst, other than Caggiula. And that's how I saw those two players. Lucic had 940, though, even strength minutes. I mean, he shouldn't be getting more than 600. And, his scoring chance shots, Bruce, he was the, in terms of even strength, grade A scoring chance shots by a winger, can you get off a shot in the slot on net? Again, Lucic was the worst Oilers winger. He was lower than Tobias Reeder. Even strength, he just doesn't generate scoring chances.
He's got six more goals, so
yeah, he had better. I mean, Reeder, I'm not going to say it was puck luck with Toby Reeder. The guy can't.
It was
confidence. He'd get chances and he'd drill them right into the goalie. Like, that was Toby Reeder. He would. How many times did Toby Reeder shoot the puck right into the middle of the goalie? Well, I can tell you, because Toby Reeder had 21 grade A shots, Bruce, last year. 21 grade A scoring chance shots. So 21 times he took the puck and he rammed it right into the goalie's midsection, right from the slot.
I'd say he got robbed on about five of those and maybe hit three or four posts along the way. But yeah, too many times that what looked like should have been a goal wasn't, that's for sure.
I think Toby Reeder was a five-goal scorer who ended up scoring zero goals. And Milan Lucic scored
six goals and 14 assists.
Okay, he scored just the right amount of goals for the grade A chances that he had. So puck luck didn't work either way with him. But he just doesn't generate much anymore. So again, as a fourth liner. So, but this is a definite case where a player that the Oilers have has more value to another team. And so should be moved. He should be moved for a couple of reasons. If not this season, next season. First of all, the Oilers have got to get rid of that no movement clause by the expansion draft. Yeah. So I think they have, if I'm not mistaken, they have to move him next summer for that to happen. Because I think if he plays the whole year, you can't invoke the no movement clause before the expansion draft happens. So you're too late for that. So they have these two windows this summer and next summer. And I could be wrong. Maybe there's another summer in there, but I just think there's the two summers. They've got to move him before that expansion draft. Otherwise they have to protect him. And that would be death to the franchise. So to have to waste, well, close to it.
Mortal blow.
Mortal blow. Yeah. I haven't yet begun to fight. It lost my arm, but so now a team picking him up, they won't have one of the conditions of the trade. I'm sure will be like, no, Milan, you can't have your no movement clause anymore. So, there's an advantage. The other team doesn't have to worry about that, but it's a huge factor for the Oilers to consider. And they're going to have to bring in a bad contract. But as Darren Dreger, TSN, he doesn't always get it right, like the Nikita Zaitsev rumor, whatever that's all about. But he said there's about 35 players, and it'd be interesting to go through and take a look at the contracts.
Well, I believe it. One per team. I mean, people
that are bad contracts
on the Lucic contract, like. Edmonton's got something no one else has got. And he might be the one of the worst examples just because of the term of the thing and how early into the contract he started falling off a cliff. But there are a lot of bad contracts.
Especially if you include like the injured guys, right? Like if you go, because those really hurt you too, because you can't use that cap space in the summer. Mm-hmm. You can start trying, I think when the season starts, you can start to fill it. But then, who are you going to get? You have cap space, but you can't use it. So isn't that how it works? Like if you have Henrik Zetterberg's contract,
mm-hmm.
And you can fill it starting October 1st, but you can't be ahead of it going into the year, right? You have to be cap compliant
within 10% throughout the summer, and then when the season starts, you have to be fully compliant. But I mean, you want to talk about bad contracts? I had a little exchange yesterday with some hockey buddies about. Who you would trade Lucic for, and the name Brent Seabrook came up. Ooh. Brent Seabrook has a tremendous track record in his career, as does Milan Lucic. He's got 5 years to go at $6.875 million. Longer term, bigger cap hit. And this past year, he fell through and below the 20 minutes a game mark with still 5 years to run on his contract. And that's just going to be a big hole in it. So, there are other bad contracts out there, and careful what you wish for. If you traded him for Brent Seabrook, I'm not sure you'd be coming out ahead in the deal. Hard as that is to believe.
Remember a few years ago when there was prominent media people, lots of them pushing the Oilers to sign Brent Seabrook? What's that? Is that your cat or your dog?
I'm not sure what's going on.
I hope they're okay.
Yeah. Keep talking.
Okay. Check, yeah. So a few years ago, that was the talk, like the Oilers should bring in Brett Seabrook. And I'm so glad that did not happen. You can see at the time he was headed into the twilight years of his career. And I think there had already been a slight statistical dip in his game. So thank goodness the Oilers did not make that move at the time. But there is, I think, about what's the update there, Bruce? What's just happening?
Too high strung, look like. Almost pit bull style dogs going by on leashes that saw another dog and they're yiping. I thought someone was dying, but apparently not.
Sounded always like a dog to me, not a person.
Yeah, well, it was definitely, no, I thought it was a dog dying, but it wasn't.
So, yeah, I was just ranting about Seabrook and glad that they didn't sign him.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was the trade people were worried about, because of Oilers, that they didn't actually do. So, there's yet.
Avoided signing Seabrook, avoided trading Leon Draisaitl. So the Oilers have done a few things okay. Not everything.
No.
So they're going to have to take on a bad contract, but maybe if there's a team desperate for toughness. So this is my point about him having more value. Right. The Oilers have Cassian. The Oilers have Jujhar Khaira. The Oilers have Darnell Nurse. They have three guys who in the modern NHL can play a bit and are also really tough. Mm-hmm. And I think between those three, you're not getting pushed around. Cassian is a really fearsome hockey player.
Yeah.
And Darnell Nurse can be a little bit less so, but he's getting, you know, he's not getting any smaller or weaker, Darnell Nurse. He's truly into his man strength years. He's
221 pounds all of a sudden. You remember when he used to look like he was lean and mean? Now he's filled right out.
Yeah, I remember his past. Yeah. So trade Lucic to that team that's desperate for toughness. They're out there. There's probably, I bet you there's 5 to 10 teams right now who are absolutely desperate for toughness.
As we talked in our podcast as recently as yesterday, Lucic's value is never going to approach $6 million, but it's probably gone up, you know, just due to the recent playoffs when the referees display the new old NHL policy of putting their whistles away anytime the games start to matter. And there was a lot of heavy hockey being played. One of the things that frustrated me was seeing Patrick Maroon. I love the fact that he played and won the Stanley Cup because I like him as a player. But it reminded me that two of Peter Chiarelli's best trades, in fact, two of his few good trades, were in his first year when he got first Zach Cassian and then Patrick Maroon in trades for little acquisition costs and fairly decent I mean, you remember Anaheim even retained $500,000 on Maroon's salary for 2 years. So they had those two guys in the bank, and then that summer he went out and added a third big, heavy winger to the equation in Lucic and locked him up for way more money, way longer term. And as a result of that, when Maroon's contract was about to come up, they had no choice but to get rid of him because they couldn't afford to keep them all by then. They would have been better off to keep Patrick Maroon and not Milan Lucic, to never acquire Milan.
Which I said definitely at the time. I can't recall what you were saying, but I was definitely saying Maroon's a better hockey player than Lucic. Now, you know, the Oilers, if they had not had Lucic, they might have signed Maroon to like a 4-year deal at like $4 million or something like that.
That could well have happened. It'd still be better off than it is right now.
They would be better off. And Maroon, you know, anyway, like would he have earned $4 million? Like he had a pretty good playoffs.
It'll be interesting to see what he gets this summer, eh? And with whom?
It will be. He's a Patrick Maroon.
He's not going to
be a better player than it wasn't close. Like he was better offensively, better defensively. Not nearly as fearsome, perhaps, but pretty tough in his own right. So,
yeah, he's not going to solve your speed problem, and that was one of the reasons they had to move on. They had a redundancy in the heavy winger department. So, what the frustrating part to me is that they went out and paid the big money after they had already made two bargain acquisitions, and sort of anyway.
So many terrible deals.
And all of that aside, you know what? I actually like Milan Lucic as a player. I liked him when he was with Boston. I even kind of liked him with L.A., other than that time he tripped Laurent Brossoit and the refs all missed the goalie interference and goal was scored. But, you know, I mean, I understand the style of hockey that he played, and when he was at his best and before his hands deserted him, he was a damn useful player. He'd win a lot of battles. He had the fearsomeness and, you know, he was a guy who could keep up with David Krejci's and, you know, contribute to that line. And we just have just seen the diminishing residue of that player here in Edmonton.
Yeah. I don't mind him on the fourth line as long as he just stays there. And Bruce, I think they should have him kill penalties. Like, honestly. And I know that's a controversial statement. I can see by your reaction. But listen, he's as fast as Matt Hendricks. He's not a stupid hockey player. I don't think he's a stupid hockey player. He's smart. And he's not small. He just needs to get his stick in the right place, work hard, and be willing to block shots. And I think Milan Lucic might be able to do all those things as a penalty killer. He's be as decent a penalty killer as Benoit Pouliot or Matt Hendricks, and both of them are pretty good. As good a penalty killer as Jujhar Khaira. And Then he's out there. Then you don't have to put him on the power play where he's no good anymore. But I think he could do the job.
One thing about penalty killing, you don't have to handle the puck a whole lot.
You do not. Just has to be willing to block shots. And
now, well, here's his block shot. He's very consistent, David. This is just since 2013, 22, 23, 22, 20, 25, and 22. Now, that's not a penalty killer's total, but, of course, he hasn't been killing penalties in all those years. But it's a pretty low number for the number of minutes that he plays. It's not really his game filling the shooting lane.
I'd be willing to bet.
Do as a PK.
I'd be willing to bet he blocks more shots on the PK. If he, in equal time, he would block twice or three times as many shots as Zach Cassian did. Mm-hmm. So, Zach, like, the Oilers have a bunch of guys who are no good at killing penalties. I don't think Lucic would be any worse. I think he might be better. Because it's something for him to hang, like, it's a role that he could do and embrace. And in the latter part of his career, as he's playing out the string, maybe bring value and bring the admiration of the fans. Because I think that's what he wants. I think that's what all these players want in some way, is to contribute to winning and have the fans on their side, have the coach on your side. And anything you can do in that regard will help. So I'm all in favor of that for Milan Lucic.
My guess is he'd be exposed as a penalty killer, but we have never had the chance to find out. I mean, maybe that's what the preseason is for. If you're going to play all those bloody games, maybe find out a thing or two about some of your players.
He could be exposed.
I still think, yes, I could be wrong. Harvey could be get a look on the penalty kill. Maybe he'd get exposed. I don't know, but he's got more of the stick, you know, the quick stick that you like to see.
I think Puljujärvi would be really good on the PK, and I've never understood. Like, even in Bakersfield, when he went down there for four games, they didn't use him there. So it makes no sense to me that they didn't use him there, at least. And why wouldn't he be good at it? He's huge. He's got huge wingspan. He's got a good stick. Mm-hmm. He's fast. And if you have to be willing to block shots.
It's about the discipline part. On the penalty killer, you got to be passive aggressive. You got to keep the contain game going, whereas Lucic's tendency is to go and bang the guy into the boards. Well, when they got one extra guy than you, then you know, you start going and running out of position a little bit then. So I don't see it, but I hear what you're saying. I'd like to see him try it in the preseason and find out. But maybe I want him to bring in some real penalty killers. Maybe that would be a solution.
My secret agenda is probably to, like, get him off the power play once and for all. And you got to throw him a bone and maybe that'll be it and that'll work. But so that is part of my agenda. But, you know, you're going to have to, I do think a $6 million a year player wants some special teams time. We'll give him the PK and see how that goes. All right, man. Have we decided once and for all what it was? I guess he's hold.
Yeah. And that's with both hands tied behind our back because of that Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse contract of his. You can't, you know, the folding is just uneconomical.
I think the expansion draft represents a fifth horseman.
Well, that's part of the no movement clause. Like, that's a extra burden of that horse.
I guess so.
You're dragging around the expansion protected
list. But we're agreed they must move him this summer. Like, mm-hmm. one of these, like, before that expansion draft, they must move this player. Mm-hmm. So in some ways it's almost like you're going to either have to buy him out or move him next summer. Mm-hmm. If that's your last chance. If in fact I'm right, and that's the last chance, it's one or the other. So the clock's ticking on him in Edmonton, and we'll see where this goes.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Milan Lucic in Edmonton, I think you could safely compare his 3 years in Edmonton to the 3 years that expensive free agent Marc Messier spent in Vancouver. Remember how sideways that went on them and how quickly? And he'd been such a good player, and they just had to get rid of him because it just wasn't working there at all. And it's a parallel, I think, to what we're seeing here.
Let me just have a look at what Messier did in Vancouver.
Lost.
Yeah. Well, he was still almost a point a game player. Like, he's a 0.7, 0.8 player per game player. So I think that it's worse than that, Bruce, would be my.
Ask a Canucks fan about that, but sure.
Yeah.
But so anyway,
Canucks fans the are same thing. That
expectations were here, performance was there.
Okay, you know? Fair enough. In terms of expectation, the gap may have been as wide. I'll give you that, but the performance was a lot better overall. He got, for like in his first year, he got 60 points in 82 games, and in his last year, he got 54 points in 66 games. So, but he was not the leader. He was not the Messiah.
And he was, was the issue. They brought him in. They gave him the C and just said, "Have at it. Lead us out of the wilderness."
Did he have conflict with Pavel Bure?
I can't remember all the details. I just remember Vancouver fans were pretty choked after he spent all those years beating them as an Oiler.
They never won a cup in Vancouver, have they, Bruce?
Nope. And the clock's ticking on them next. Now that St. Louis has got one. And so the Canucks and the Sabres, both 1970 expansion teams, neither one has ever won a cup. So they're at the top of the list of longest team, longest time around that have never won. And of course, Toronto is leading the league in terms of longest time, consecutive years without winning one now at 51 seasons.
They've got some good young forwards in Vancouver, that's for sure. But they need, desperately need, the best defenseman in Vancouver plays junior hockey, put it that way.
Quinn Hughes is going to be their best defenseman.
I think. That's true. I forgot about Quinn Hughes. Maybe he will be a good player. Mm-hmm. It will be. All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.